That's what the vets get on the Warrior Connection. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Tonight we're going to continue our conversation and facing some of the issues dealing with families and everybody else that's gone to war and what happens afterwards. So as we begin to discuss that, Denise, are you here by chance? Carol, are you there by chance?
I am.
Well, welcome, Carol.
Hello,
how are you doing? Are you there, Carol?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Sure can. Well, welcome.
Okay, how are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. How's Jim?
Jim's okay. He's here not too far from me.
That's excellent. Denise, are you on by chance yet? Okay, well, I know, Carol, Denise had set everything up with you.
Right.
Have you joined everything. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what your issues and concerns are and what you've learned over all these years. I mean, we go back many, many years together where we've all known each other.
Right. Who am I speaking with?
This is Doug Rocky.
Oh, okay, okay. How you doing? You're doing good. Well, let me see. We met way back when in the 90s in Washington, D.C., I believe.
A long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Since then, you know, as most Gulf War veterans, my husband has had his ups and downs, more downs than ups, but, you know, you just kind of got to roll with it. Last time I had to quit a second job, which was a pretty good job, was in 2012, April of 2012, and due to a three hospitalizations in a year. And someone had suggested I get on the Gold Star Wives page on Facebook, and I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, after a while thinking about it, I thought, yeah, why not? So I went over there and I spoke to some people and some of the women, and they said, sure, you know, and I told them my situation. I said, look, you know, my husband's still alive. I'm just trying to look at what information's out there. Lo and behold, I found the most shocking news I just never would have imagined.
And what was that? I mean, first off, let's go back. I mean, your husband has an incredible military career, and his contributions to the U.S. Army have been staggering for many, many years, and then especially during Desert Storm. I mean, you know, what was all involved and what happened to him that's, you know, led into this whole series of a mess? I mean, for our listeners, they get a good understanding of where it all started and how it all progressed.
Okay, well, I'll just give you a brief summary as best as I can. When he was 17, he enlisted. He served in the Navy and the Marines, and he switched to the Army for education reasons, became a physician. When he served in the Gulf War in 91, he went as a physician. When he returned, he just didn't feel quite right, couldn't do PT. His health changed. He got off active duty thinking maybe he was just getting a little older, and soon discovered that that wasn't really the case. I mean, at the time, he was early 40s. So soon discovering that the age wasn't the issue with the health problems, eventually learning that this was all related to the 91 Gulf War and receiving documentation from the, I believe it was the DOD, actually confirming that he was in an area where there was nerve agent.
Yeah, we had a lot of nerve agent exposures. I mean, as you know, I mean, your husband and I was involved at 3rd MedCom at the headquarters, and so we were doing all the briefings and the teachings.
Right.
That's probably where the first time Jim and I ran across each other. God, that's a long time ago.
Yeah,
but, you know, Denise, are you here now?
I am. It took a little while to get connected today for some reason, and
yeah.
Wanted to be sure we allow the sufficient time to cover the bill that Carol and her husband have been working on.
Yeah, so what we're doing right now is Carol is just telling a little bit about what happened to Jim and all the confirmation of all the nerve agent exposures, the hazmat and everything else. And just like you, both of you guys were treating casualties, and, you know, obviously cross-contamination came on down, much less the contamination that, you know, came right on down on top of all of us and on top of you guys at your medical facility. So, Carol, could you continue on a little, please?
Jim was Jim basically was explained to me that his unit was not very busy, so to speak, so he volunteered and went out with some of the flight crew in helicopters picking up the women and children that were stranded in the desert and taking them to camps to keep them safe. And that may be when the chemicals were in the air that he actually had the exposure that caused his illness. It may have been a combination of that along with Agent Orange, because after Vietnam he did go to medical school. He didn't show any illness effects of Agent Orange, but it could have been the two combined together just triggered like a double whammy.
Yeah, we know today, and again, this is one thing we've discussed a lot here before on Warrior Connection and all over and at the hearings we've all been to, is the 1 plus 1 is not 2, because when you get these complex exposures, 1 plus 1 plus 1 ends up to be 9, 10, 12, 15. So it's a very synergistic relationship where you could have had a little bit of exposure and not have any effects, and you have a second or third exposure, and then the consequences are just devastating.
Right, exactly.
And I remember Jim was just, I mean, you know, like John Wayne running all over Rambo all over the place, and then, you know, just deteriorated like all of us have done.
Yeah, I mean, he could run circles around me. Now it's actually, I'm the one running circles around him, and I'm a pretty laid-back person, so it's kind of odd, you know, to see that situation unfold. When he finally did, the VA finally did acknowledge everything, and we got the education benefit, so I went back to school, got my bachelor's, and then I went ahead on and got my master's and went to work. And as I was saying, there was two different times that I had been employed that I had to give up that employment, and I'm not complaining about that. Understand that. You know, I have no issue with that. To me, that was part of the deal when I married him, for better or worse.
Thank you, Carol.
I have no issue with that. What I do take issue is what I found out over this past year.
Okay, now we're going to get started with that, and that's the Survivor Benefit Plan and DIC Offset for Survivors that you found out about.
Right.
And how did you find out about it?
Well, I went to the Gold Star Wives page after discussing with a couple of the women that were administrators that I'm no longer on that page, by the way, but at the time I just wanted to get some information because someone had suggested it to me. And I saw on the page where there was a woman that had made a video about it and talked about how she and several widows in Las Vegas had to move in together because they couldn't afford to pay their bills. And I emailed her at the end of her video. She had her email, and she confirmed everything and showed me where the laws were, and I was just in shock. I thought, oh, my gosh. And to add salt to the wound, you find out that, first of all, let me explain how this works, and then I can explain the other part that we found out.
Okay.
The way the SBP DIC offset works is if someone stays in the military 20 or more years, they earn a retirement. Now, before they leave active duty, they have an option. They can get the entire retirement, 100%, or they can opt to take less and make payments so that the spouse will receive 55% of the retirement amount.
The surviving spouse.
Yes, which is called the Survivor's Benefit Pension. I mean, the active duty soldier, when they retire, they're actually paying for this. It's like paying for an insurance policy. You know, you pay this, and then we're going to provide this should you pass away.
Okay.
Okay. So you pay into this, and I think the 20 years is the maximum pay-in. You pay that in, and it's considered paid in full.
All right.
So then, in fact, I'm sure that's what it is. It's 20 years, and monthly it runs approximately $250 a month right now.
Yeah, they said I was reading on it to be prepared today, and it says the retired member pays 6.5% of this retired pay as a premium. So, you know, it's like a policy, basically. You're paying into it.
Exactly. So you paid in with your life and your years of service for your own, and then you pay an additional cash to receive this benefit for your spouse as a survivor's benefit pension should you pass away before they do. Okay, now that's you know, you count on that. You know, we say, okay, well, we figure out what our income's going to be. I mean, any responsible couple is going to look at what the income's going to be should one or the other pass away. So we count on that. And then we, you know, he becomes disabled right after the Gulf War, prime of life, could have been making millions of dollars as a physician in private practice, okay? But, you know, we accept it. This is the hand of the cards the dealer gave us, and we can't toss them back. You know, we got what we got. We work with it. We live with it. He receives eventually 100% VA pension, and so as a result of that, we learn that there will be another pension for me called the Dependents Indemnity Compensation, otherwise known as DIC.
Right, which provides about $1,215 per month.
Yeah, today's rate. So in my mind, all these years, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get 55% of this and this DIC.
Right.
So I'll be okay. I'll be able to meet expenses without stressing out. Now, keep in mind, we could not buy more life insurance because of his health.
Right.
So the life insurance that we had when he got sick 20 years ago was all we were going to get, unless you buy one of these, like, $25,000 policies that you pay, like, $600 a month. You know what I'm talking about. There's extreme policies out there you can get, but they're not worth what you pay into them.
Right.
So anyway, back to the SBP DIC. Well, I learned after I had to quit my job again and lost the second opportunity to build my own retirement that the way the government works with this is they will subtract the $1,250. Let's just suppose my SBP is $1,800. I'm just throwing that out there. That's not what it is.
Right.
Probably less than that, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay.
And let's just round off that $1,215 to $1,200 to make it easier, too, okay?
Right.
Okay. What's going to happen is they're going to take that DIC benefit, offset my SBP. So my SBP becomes $1,800 minus $1,200, $300. They're going to return the premium that was paid for the SBP, which if it was paid in full, I figured out in 4 years' time it comes out even. So after 4 years, you really would lose money, essentially. You'd just be losing money constantly, at the rate of $1,200 or whatever that rate is per month that they offset.
They could see whatever you're getting under Survivor for SBP and DIC, you forfeit a dollar of that Survivor benefit pension, basically.
Right. So essentially the amount I would get every month would be that $1,800 in total, because $300 would be the SBP and the $1,200 would be the I'm not adding that up right, but
$600.
Yeah. If it was $1,800 total, $1,200 would be the DIC, and $600 would be the SBP.
Right.
Are you following me on that?
I am.
Okay, now as upsetting as that was, it was even more appalling to find out that this is not done to federal employees. It used to be, but they changed it, but they left the military retirees out of it. So a federal employee could have served in the military 4 years, pass away, their spouse will get their retirement pension, however they set it up, plus the DIC.
Right.
And the same goes with someone who served 4 years in the military, went to college, say they went and became a college professor or an executive for some corporation, and they set up a private retirement account, okay? their spouse would, and later in life, let's say they found out, oh, yes, you have Agent Orange. You're 100% disabled because of Agent Orange. Your cancer is related to that. They pass away. Their spouse then is eligible for the DIC benefit along with any other retirement that was saved up. There is no offset. The only people that are discriminated against for the offset are the honorable military retirees who became disabled, their widows and widowers. That's it. I was just stunned to learn all of this. The Military Officers Association of America in July sponsored an event. What do you call that?
A conference.
No, Denise, you know what they call that when you go to lobby Congress and
right.
Senators, there's a word for it.
Well, you're going to, you know, them, and they had the bills, which we...
There's a word for it. Do you know the word?
Storming the hill.
No, there's a word for it. I can't think of the word right now. But anyway,
advocating.
We all met in Virginia,
right.
And we had a meeting, and there was Gold Star Wives there.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day we went, not lobbying, there's another word for it. I know there's a word for it. It's just slipping my mind right now. We all went over to the Capitol Hill and met with Congress members. We actually had, my husband and I actually met with Senator Mitch McConnell.
Okay, that's great.
Now, and we met with Andy Barr very briefly, though, because he had to run off and vote on some bill. Okay, the thing is the way Mitch McConnell explained it to us is that this has been an issue that has been brought up for years. It's new to me, but apparently it's not new to them. And it's been brought up for years, and he has signed it in the past, and then it would get attached to a bill.
Right.
And when it came time to be passed, to pass a bill, a lot of times the compromise was to pull this out. And so he says at this time he's not going to support it because he said there's no funding for it. Now,
I was just reading here that in 2008, Congress acknowledged that it was inequality in the law, and they authorized a modest special survivor indemnity allowance for the widows to begin phasing out the offset.
Well, what they do is they give them a payment of some small portion. I forget what it is.
Yeah, it's like $150, I think.
Yeah. It's like putting a Band-Aid on... an injury that you need, you know, if you don't get the proper treatment, you're going to end up amputated, and they put a Band-Aid on it.
And apparently that has an end date on it of 2017.
Yes.
So, you know, they haven't completely equalized this, and they call it the widow's tax.
Yes.
And it only affects the spouse. It doesn't affect the children, just the spouse.
Well, see, for the children now, what happens if, suppose someone was on active duty, right, and they were
right.
killed in action?
Correct.
Their spouse will receive the DIC and has the option of not having the offset if she assigns or he assigns the SBP to the children until they reach the age of 18. And then, of course, once they reach the age of 18, if they go to college, they're also eligible for education benefits with Chapter 35. So the children are not, in a sense, not completely cut off at that point because there will still be other funding available for them.
Uh-huh.
And if the spouse also receives that Chapter 35 benefit, which is a benefit that allows her to have 10 years to use 48 months of education to be prepared for that point. In the case of someone who's actually reached retirement,
correct.
You're talking about people that are older in most cases. And in like in a situation, in our personal situation, I used the benefit to prepare for the education, to prepare for a career, in full anticipation that I would likely have to be able to support myself.
Okay.
Oh, thank God my husband has not passed away. I thank God for that.
Yeah, we've been lucky on that, though, Carol, very lucky, and Jim's been lucky. He's still with us.
Exactly. There's even a doctor in California who told a mutual friend that he was shocked that he was still alive.
Wow.
Now, you had to, along with all this stuff, you had to give up your career in order to take care of Jim for a bunch of years now, correct?
I have. And then to add more salt to the wounds, you know, they have a caregiver's benefit, which is a different bill, but that excludes anyone prior to 9/11.
Right. We had Rebecca on the show a number of weeks ago that we went through that.
Right. So I don't want to rehash all that.
Right.
But I'm just...
I want to mention the bill numbers because it's important to have that down.
Okay.
And the Senate bill, if I do wrong, you tell me, Carol, but I researched it and it was 734, the Senate bill.
Yes.
And there's 27 co-sponsors out of 100 senators, which is not good. We need to get the numbers up for sure. And the House bill, and I imagine these are mirror bills.
Yes, they are.
But the House bill is House Bill 32, which is H.R. 32. And there's 180 co-sponsors on that, 100 Democrats and 80 Republicans. So that's good, but usually you want to shoot for like 218, which is two-thirds plus one, I think it is, that you want to try to get those numbers up on co-sponsors. So what do you need the public to do to help on this? I want to get that out before we get to discussing other things. How can the public, since we brought you on the radio, how can they...
Okay. Well, if everyone wants to grab a paper and pen and write those down, it's House Bill H.R. 32.
Right.
And Senate Bill 734.
Right.
And if you, when you contact your congressman, you want to reference House Bill H.R. 32. When you contact your senators, you want to reference Senate Bill S-734. And you want to ask them to sponsor these bills. And not only to sponsor the bill, but to see it through. To see that it actually gets passed and that we end this inequality. In fact, I personally feel it's more than an inequality because we have such a disparity. When you don't have this offset for private civilians or for federal employees' retirements, I feel that this is almost like it's a robbery.
Now, what is the cost factor? What's the holdup with the Senate and the House of doing this? Because it appears to me, and correct me, I mean, this is what you're going to hear from others, but it appears to me you've paid in for your survivor benefit.
Exactly. We have.
And
we have paid in for our survivor. We are paying in, I should say. We're still paying in. We haven't paid in for the full 20 years yet, but it's getting up there.
Instead of deducting, you know, the DIC from survivor benefit, they shouldn't be doing that.
No. A really good place to find this information, too, if any of the listeners would like to look it up, if you go to the Military Officers Association of America's website or you Google MOAASBP-DIC offset for survivors, you will be able to get so many facts. Now,
the Gold Star people have it up on their website. And
okay. Just know about this one. So what I wanted to say is that you talked about the cost factor. They had determined when we had our meeting with them, they sponsored the storming. That's what the word I was looking for earlier, storming. They sponsored the Storming the Capitol event. And what they determined is approximately 61,000 widows and widowers are affected by this offset.
Okay.
Now, if you want to talk about how much money we're talking about, not only has the SBP been paid for, particularly by the retired service members, but 61,000, if you divide that between the 50 states, you're not talking about that many people. I mean, you think about all the other ways that the government spends money and allocates funding. There is no excuse for this.
There is none.
There's absolutely no excuse for this. There's no justification for this.
Except,
and another thing
except
that was,
if you
another thing that was thrown at me when I was meeting with the and some of the workers that work for one of the legislators.
Right, staffers.
They used to offset Social Security as well. And they no longer do that. And I was like, oh, and I'm supposed to take comfort in that? Because the fact of the matter is, a widow has to be 60 to even think about the Social Security.
Right.
Widow's benefit.
Well, a lot of benefit in DIC would come for the active duty, right? If they're injured in active duty wartime, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, what I'm saying is the DIC, anyone that served in the military could possibly, their spouse could possibly be eligible for the DIC if their illness or disease ends up being service-connected.
Well, what I'm asking is an active-duty person serving over in Afghanistan that gets injured severely. He's paying in if he's, going for a career to the survivor benefit plan, correct?
Yes.
So although the widows right now that are very concerned and should be the topmost concern is the 62,000 figure, I think what you're running into is looking at the active duty that may be eligible also for survivor benefit, even though they haven't put the full 20 years in.
Oh yeah, for their spouses, sure. Well, their spouses wouldn't be an issue unless they pass away if they're killed in action.
Right.
But the reason that active duty should be concerned about this is because they're probably not aware of it.
I'm thinking that it's education, and that's why I wanted to get you on the radio show today, is to talk about that and to include. It's not just those that have retired; it's active duty. And I was surprised. I haven't completed all my searches, but the Non-Commissioned Officers Association, I don't think they've signed on and mentioned this, have they?
I am not aware of that. I just, like I said, I learned of this, and then I learned of this event with the Military Officers Association, signed up. Jim and, I took Jim. I cared for Jim. I will have to say, they were extremely polite and very helpful. They reduced the load of the people they had planned for us to see once they met Jim and realized it would be too difficult for him to do as much as they were hoping we would do. And they actually provided taxi service for us to get from the hotel to the House of Reps.
Well, that's good.
Or to the Rayburn Building. They did this for a few others that were, they had a bus, but there was a few people that they identified that it would be kind of difficult for them to have to deal with the bus. And they just went out of their way to provide this support to see this change. And, yes, if this gets changed, of course, it includes all the military. There's no division, whether you're an officer or a non-commissioned officer or an enlisted. In fact, let me just fill you in on something that is very respectable of my husband. My husband went from an E-1 to an O-5. He has been enlisted. He has been an officer. He has been both. We never count ourselves as any better than anybody else, ever.
I would think having Jim going with you would have made an impact.
You would have thought that. I would have thought that, too.
Did you see that happen with any of them that you met with?
Some of the staffers, yes. The staffers, I would say, definitely were impressed by that. Jim is very, very good at hiding his symptoms, too. Like, you know, he experiences so much pain, and I don't want to get into all the physical ailments that he experiences because it's kind of private information. It's his business if he wants to share that.
Right. But he reminds me a lot of the general that testified with Anthony and I that, you know, fought for the ALS reference to expand it to those that were not Gulf War vets, and we got that done. So, you know, he died shortly after that. I was amazed at him. I knew the amount of intestinal strength is the only way I can say it, that to come to Washington out of the Carolinas, and he was in a specially adapted wheelchair, had the respiratory support, but to use that strong voice that he did at the hearing, and much less any other meetings he had on the Hill, and what he had been doing for everybody else in that situation, not to, you know, not so much for him, but everybody else.
Right,
and
right.
We have to realize that I'm sure it probably shortened his life a little bit going through that. And he's a hero, as Jim is to me, for, you know, making those extra trip and trying to impact a difference for so many thousands of other people. I mean, you use the figure 62,000, but there's probably more, I would think.
61,000 is the approximate number of the widows and widowers that has been determined by the MOAA. That was the number they presented. I'm sure that they did extensive research to come up with that number. And that was, you know, and this is, you know, as I said, this we're talking specifically about the widows and the widowers that have the offset. Yes, there's more widows and widowers out there, but not that they do not have, not all have the offset.
Right.
I know that there are widows and widowers who are maybe like a third wife or whatever that will receive the DIC, and yet those of us who, and you know, and I'm not knocking that, I know that happens, but I'm just saying those of us that stood firm through this all, you know, we've been there through, and again, I don't want to give specific details, but there's been some rough times when I've done things I never would have imagined I would have been doing for my husband and stuck it out, you know. And I know a veteran of Iraq who was shot in the face, and his fiance came to meet him in Walter Reed. Was it Walter Reed, Jim?
Yes.
And basically said to him, you know, I can't deal with this, and left. And the point that I'm making is, you know, there are a lot of us spouses that this was not what we envisioned when we got married. But you know what? It is what it is.
Right.
And I've toughed it out. It was 25 years we celebrated this year, and I've lost two chances to build up my own decent retirement. I could have continued to build on a state retirement, enjoyed my job. But, you know, when your husband's hospitalized three times in 1 year and needing certain care that would be much better provided by you than by a stranger, you have to, you know, weigh your options and do what you have to do.
You know, one of the things
besides contacting senators and congressmen, people, if you're out there and listening to us, and if you're a member of VFW, a Reserve Officers Association, Armed Forces Association, any of the associations that are for military members, I would recommend that you get in touch. If you're active in the VFW, the DAV, the American Legion, they should all be helping to get this.
I agree, and I just want to put a shout out there to the local Berea, Kentucky American Legion posts What number, Jim? 50?
50.
They actually sponsored funding for the trip for Jim and I. And when we got to the hotel that we stayed at was very accommodating. They, you know, we paid, of course, for the lodging, but they actually bumped us up, you know, when they met Jim and knew what was going on, they bumped us up to a nicer a room. So, you know, there are people out there that care. You know, that's the good thing. And no matter what happens in this world, there's always more people that care than more people that don't care. But unfortunately, just caring doesn't get some of these problems fixed.
Right.
But what could possibly fix this now, and as you said, to make the greatest impact on this radio show, is if I could just impress upon every listener out there to send an email, pick up the phone, tell them H.R. 32 for the congressman, please support this. It's just unfair. It's wrong.
And if people don't know how to find those numbers, let me interject. You can go to www.house.gov, and there's a little icon you press that says representatives. You can ask for it alphabetically or by state, and find your representatives. To find your senator, you go to www.senate.gov. Again, press a little icon that shows senators. Again, it's either alphabetical or by state, and you need to contact both of your senators.
Yeah, and for the Senate bill, it's Senate 734. I know I've said that before. I just want to make sure we get, it's very important we get those numbers, S-734 for the Senate, H.R. 32 for Congress.
And I think we've got to get the word out more. So people that are listening to us, if you are in other organizations, please think of the widows of the military and how this affects them long term. And these are normally, you know, normally we're looking at those that served 20 years.
Oh, here's a kicker, too. I forgot to mention this.
57.
If a widow or widower happens to remarry at the age of 57, they then get both. And, you know, I've joked about that. I'm 55 now, you know. If he was to pass away, what was I supposed to do, go to a homeless shelter and find somebody to marry? No, that's a joke, okay?
Wait a minute. Let's repeat that. If you hit age 57.
Absurd. It's just absurd. I mean, the offset should not exist.
So if you hit 57 and remarry, you get both?
Yep. It says it's been validated by the courts. It terminates the offset for the SBDIC eligible who remarry at age 57 or later. So current laws punish survivors who remarry before age 55 by ending their SBP and DIC eligibility, and punish survivors age 7 and older who do not remarry.
This is really... It takes your breath away. It just really does not make it.
As I said, I emailed the person who made the video. The video is really excellent. I emailed that person, and she gave me the information where I could actually verify all this, because I was just, you know, it's just hard to believe sometimes that some of these things exist like this, but they do.
We'll be putting information on the page on our archives where you can listen to the show.
I think Doug was trying to say something. Doug, did you say something?
Yeah, I did. I'm like Jim. I came in the military, and Denise and I, all three of us, we came in way back in the 60s, okay?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And, you know, we've been in a long time, and now we're retired, and we're getting up there in age. But we've got incredible numbers of kids, and when I look at continuously dealing with all the Vietnam veterans that are still going down worse and worse because of Agent Orange and the spouses and the effects on them and the effects on the children. And we look at all the other military operations we were involved in from Vietnam onward, and then Desert Storm, which has turned into a medical catastrophe. I know when we had all this stuff doing, putting everything together, the anticipated actual battlefield casualties that we had, the wounded in action and killed in action, were very, very less than 1,000 during Desert Storm. And as we've discussed on this radio show and before, and you guys are totally aware of it because you, Denise and Jim were involved in treating the care, most of them were friendly fire. And then we have all the incredible toxic exposures. And so we're looking at all the Desert Storm people out of the 630,000 that went over there. We're well over 100,000 that have died now as a consequence of the complex toxic exposures and all the health effects of it. We're looking at over 300,000 that have applied for permanent disability with the VA, and there's so many of them are still fighting at trying to get their claims, their CNP claim through to get rated in disability, even though it's confirmed exposures, confirmed health effects. And then we continue on, and then all the stuff in intervening years, and then we get up, we started Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, and now we're looking at well over a million casualties from OIF, OEF, affecting U.S. the kids and everything that have gone on, and for us, they're kids. And we're looking at a backlog in the VA and the SB, you know, trying to get the claims through, are right at 750,000. So now you're looking at all these problems, and so these young kids have an incredible medical problems, which we saw from Vietnam, a Desert Storm, now Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. These spouses, these kids have gone in, and they're getting out where their lives are devastated, and they're in their 20s or in their 30s, and we've got some in their 40s. And then when you retire, if you're lucky, you get your benefit, but then you start bringing all these problems in. I mean, it's... I mean, the times Denise and I and Jim and all of us, we've been up there on the Hill and, you know, pushed through and tried to get things done. Denise, you've been incredible working on the Hill and on a, you know, a continuous effort up there. But I'm coming back to the same thing, is why the heck today does anybody even think about enlisting in the military?
I agree. I actually contacted a friend of ours who I encouraged him to make the military a career, and apologized to him when I learned about this offset. I apologized to him and his wife, and I said, you know, you're better off. You're going to do what you want to do, but I just want to make you very aware that you would be much better off leaving when you have the next chance. You're young enough to set up another career where you can earn retirement, and if something happens and you become disabled from your military service, you won't suffer this offset. You'll get your full retirement from another agency or company that you retire from, and then you'll turn around and you'll get the DIC.
The thing that bothers me is there's all over the place, and we've seen this for years, and we hear it day by day, and again, I saw it here again here just today. You get all the flag waving and everything else. Well, we support the veterans. We're out there for them. But when it comes down to push comes to shove, we got incredible problems where there's incredible deficiencies in medical care, whether it's physiological medical care or psychological medical care. We have incredible problems where the contamination is just spread not only during battle operations and wherever we've been, Vietnam, the Middle East, or wherever, now into Africa, and the same thing back here in the States. And then we just go on and on and on. And day after day, the veteran goes down. Some are very young that have incredible medical problems, and especially the women. And Denise, you've talked about this ad nauseum and worked on it. And then you get the other ones, too. Some of us have stayed around and stayed in for a long time and kept going back war after war after war, and now we're at the end of the whole thing. And now you're facing a nightmare. So as we talked about on the radio show a couple of weeks ago, we got the caregivers bill. We got incredible numbers out there that are unable to take care of themselves. And Carol, you've had to take care of Jim for several years now because he's unable to take care of himself. And for us, that's just, I mean, unimaginable.
Right. Off and on for almost our entire marriage, actually, over 20 years.
Yeah, and then all this stuff is forgot about because it's kind of like there's nobody out there helping. And this is part, again, the caregiver's bill, and now we got all this stuff with the DIC and the everything else, SBP. But the people that are out there waving the flag don't realize, well, here are the real consequences of what happened when we went to war. Here are the real consequences of the health effects of war. It is not just getting shot up or blown up where you have a physical injury and you get a Purple Heart for it, but it's all these other complex medical problems, and now they're developed from war, that don't show up visibly to the average person on the street, And yet we live with serious medical problems that are really out there, and yet at the same time, both the Department of Defense and all the medical, whether all branches, Air Force, Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, or whatever, and the VA continuously disavow any connection between all of this stuff and what has happened to the kids that go into the military or those who have stayed in. We were extremely healthy when we got deployed, and we come back totally trashed.
Right.
I mean, it's just like, what has happened to our nation? And then in the House and the Senate, I mean, both Denise and I have testified. We've written report upon report upon report. We've had a whole bunch of congressmen and senators who've been absolutely incredibly supportive. But overall, you see the same thing happen. Well, we've got a budgetary issue. Wait a minute. There isn't a question on the budgetary issue of providing care to a military veteran. There shouldn't be any question whatsoever. But yet, they keep coming down. How do I slash the budget? Where I'm going to slash TRICARE, or I'm going to slash the medical support, or I'm going to slash this. And we're creating more and more casualties on a daily basis. They're going to need more and more care. So these young kids that have gone to OIF, OEF, they're coming back with horrific medical problems, requiring that their families provide the day-to-day care for them because nobody else is doing it. And they're in their 20s, so what happens to them for the rest of their life? What happens to the spouses that want to have everything? What happens to the rest of the families? I mean, this is what Warrior Connection was put together to get this information out, to educate everybody, to get the truth out about
Doug,
what is happening.
I just want to say, for the veterans who are post-9/11, which means basically if they served in the military on the day of 9/11 and any day after, they actually do get a lot more. Their spouses actually do get a lot of support, not only financially. They can be paid up to $30,000 a year, but they also are entitled to respite and training and, you know.
And CAMP VA for the spouse.
Yeah, and insurance. And so, you know, they're not totally left out in the cold. So, but what's wrong is that it wasn't, you know, things are not equal for everyone. And I'm glad, you know what, I'm glad that they have that benefit. I would never want to see that taken away from them, you know, and in any discussions that I've had about the inequality has never been to take anything away from anyone.
No, we want to include everyone so it's consistent and uniform through all of the branches, all the services, for all of the veterans and their families going back.
Right. I mean, I'm glad that those that only served 4 years and have a full retirement from another company and then discover they have Agent Orange cancer and pass away, I'm happy for their widow or widowers that receive whatever pension was set up for them by their spouse, plus the DIC. I'm happy for them. What I'm not happy about is, what happened to the military? You know, what happened to the men and women who actually put in their more than 20 years? My husband put in 32 years, 27 of which counted for retirement because of some of those years was getting education, going in the reserves. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when push came to shove and we get the total for retirement, the retirement comes to 27. But why should he be treated, and anyone in his shoes or situation, be treated less than a service member who served 4 years?
It doesn't make any sense.
It does not. I mean, it just does. It just boggles my mind. It's, you know, when I, like I said, when I first learned of this, I thought this can't be real. But it is. It really is real.
What's the position of the president, the current president or previous presidents or any anticipated presidents? I mean, we definitely got to get it passed through the House and the Senate. But again, we have to have presidential influence and presidential awareness and presidential commitment to sign any bill and support it.
I really honestly don't know, and I don't know that I really want to go there because just today I learned that the troops, active duty troops serving overseas, had their TVs cut off because of this budget, and they can't even watch ball games. So I would prefer not to even answer that question. Suffice to say, I really don't know. I just know that when it comes to the military, they just generally get short end of the stick.
Well,
so
welcome.
I don't know past presidents and current president what they would say about this. You know, getting a meeting with Senator McConnell for like a brief 5-10 minutes is like a big deal. I wouldn't even attempt to try to get one with the president, to be honest with you. Maybe others would be more fortunate than me, or maybe someone has ideas of how we could do that. I do know the Gold Star Wives have possible access through their political affiliation, as a group. But I just don't know, because, you know, really it has to be a law, and the ones who make the laws and come up with, Congress is the, you know, comes up with the funding, from what I understand, for the laws.
Right.
And the Senate has the ability to make or change law. I don't, you know, it gets so complicated, but all I know is they have the ability to correct this. They don't need the president to do it.
Right. We just need to get,
you know, I don't foresee that the president would veto this, actually, any president. If the Congress and the Senate brought this to a president, I couldn't imagine any president not accepting it.
We're going to repeat those bill numbers again. It's very important. And write it down, please, people.
Okay, for the Congress,
okay,
it's H.R., H period R period, which stands for House of Reps, Representatives, 32. For the senators, it's S period, which stands for Senate, number 734.
And y'all can Google this and get more information from, like, the Military Officers Association that Dr. Jim and Carol Stutz went up to work on, from the Gold Star Mothers, from the Military Widows have another organization. And we need to encourage y'all to contact your senators and reps, as easy as doing email online, to get the flow of interest going and to spread the word to the organizations. And, you know, if you're a member of a VFW, Legion, any organization, you know, an easy thing to do is just get some postcards. They're the cheapest way. And, you know, have an address on the front. And then on the back have each person, you know, take it to a VFW meeting or a Legion meeting and have them write a note themselves in reference to support this bill and co-sponsor it. And then just drop them in the mail. You can do it by electronic means, postcard, quick and simple. You just want to get the word out there. And it takes getting more and more people to bring this up, just like the caregiver bill extension for the pre-9/11. This can be done easily. You could ask if you have children in school and you go to a parent-teacher conference, you could do a quick presentation and get everybody to sign a postcard. There are ways to get more people involved and aware and informed, and it's important to do that because there's a lot of people out there that may not have served, but they have family members that have, that are not aware of this. And this is what this program was all about today, was to get the education out there to a broader audience. The other thing, Carol, if you can get us a link to the little video the lady had done, we can include that in the archives information.
Yeah, Denise and Carol, I need you to write up the paragraph for the archives on this and get it to me specifically, okay?
Okay. How about if I give you an excellent link?
That would be good. If you can, Denise, can you two link that to get that together and get it to me through the emails?
Sure.
Because I need this. I mean, I understand, but, I mean, I'm sitting here just shocked, okay? I don't
even
know where
to turn. Did you not know about this, Doug?
No, I didn't.
I mean, and you served.
Yeah, I know how you feel, Doug. I know exactly how you feel. all of a sudden, I mean, seriously, we're, I'm kind of panicking a little bit. I'm trying hard not to, but we need to sell our home to be prepared for this.
How much are we talking about that you would lose? Give us a rough number.
$1,215 a month. That's the difference of being able to pay my property tax and my mortgage and on the property that we have. So we're just needing to downsize as fast as we can to prepare for this. Otherwise, I mean, what life insurance we were able to get, I would probably go through it, you know, a lot quicker than I really want to or need to, because I just want to be, you know, prepared. And I've always been, my undergrad is in accounting, business administration, although I haven't used it professionally. I have the knowledge. And so I've always been one who's been really sharp and on top of being prepared for financial matters.
Right. Well, we want to thank you and Dr. Jim Stutz, who served both in Vietnam and the Gulf War, and for years in between the two. We want to thank you for taking the effort to make that trip to D.C. and to becoming involved in that. And thank you for coming on the show. I think Doug would say the same thing, except he's sitting here in shock, I think.
Yeah, well,
I'll give him
my email if he wants to. Are you there, Doug?
Yeah, well, we'll get that all connected. Yeah,
yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, you can get in touch with me, and we'll keep in touch now. And it is shocking. I know it is. It is very shocking.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the end of our show. Again, the Progressive Radio Network, Warrior Connection, education, information, essential to your life, and we need action. So, ladies and gentlemen, help us get the information out. Carol, Denise, thank you very much. Carol, I'm sitting here spinning. I don't even know where to go.